Sports City, Sports City, Chef, Chef, Sports City, Sports City, Chef, Chef, Sports City, Sports City, Chef, Chef, Sports City, Sports City, Chef. Kaboom, Sports City chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman vs. MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City, Sports City, chef, chef. Sports City, Sports City, chef, chef. Yeah. Captain, Todd.
Connecticut. Hello, how are you doing today? I hope I find you feeling healthy on this Thursday, May 20th, 2021. This is Dave here with Nate. Nate, how you doing?
Good evening, baseball world. Another day talking baseball. It's another great day. Doing just fine, Dave. Looking forward to tonight's show.
What a week of baseball. I love saying that every week. I actually, little peek behind the curtains, I have some notes that I type up for every show every week. And I think the second or third week we did this, I put in what a week of baseball, and I was going to take it out, but I just love having that there every week. But let's start by giving the call-in number for anybody who's out there and listening. You can reach us at 929-477-2759, 929-477-2759. And let's take a start with the scores around the league today. The Angels and Twins played a makeup from a game from April 17th with the Angels winning 7-1. Angels go up to 19-24. The Twins lose yet again, and they probably would have lost on April 17th anyway. So they fall to 14-28. The Angels are, you know, let's see if they'll keep winning. I mean, they're a couple games behind 500 without Mike Trout. That's basically the Shohei Ohtani's team right now. We've got the Astros who beat the Athletics in Oakland, 8-4. Astros now 26-18. The Athletics also 26 wins with 19 losses. The Cubs are 22-21 after beating the Nationals 5-2 this afternoon. The Nationals falling to 17-23. Craig Kimbrell got his ninth save in this game, by the way. My beloved Yankees today won 2-0. They blanked the Rangers in Texas. Texas falls to 19-27. The Yankees go up to 25-19 with Domingo Herman going 4-2, and Aroldis Chapman just another steamrolling outing. You know, we don't really talk a lot about it, but I just want to take a moment. Aroldis Chapman is very quietly having one of the best seasons I can remember as a closer. That's not named Mariano Rivera, but 17 games, 17 innings, 36 strikeouts. He's not given up an earned run. It's not real what he's doing. I think he's hit 103 on the radar gun. Sorry to bring this one up, my friend, but the Rays went up to 26 wins with 19 losses over the Orioles. I'll go ahead and skip reading their record. Rays win that game today 10-1. Rays putting up 18 hits. Now, you'd think 18 hits would get you a lot of runs, but we're about to see a team that got less hits and more runs as the San Francisco Giants crushed, and I mean crushed, the Cincinnati Reds 19-4. Again, 19 runs to 4 runs. I've not talked hits, just runs. That's a full 15-run blowout, a margin of victory. The Giants, though, only had 16 hits, and somehow the Reds had 10 hits. So it was only a 6-hit difference, but a 15-run difference. So not what you want if you're the Reds. I wonder if some people out there would think that was piling on, but speaking of piling on, well, you know what? Let's save that for later. Right now going on, we have the Angels and the Twins in the top of the fifth. The Twins are up. Oh, wow. They can do that. Are up 5-3 over the Angels. The Marlins are in Philadelphia. They're up 5-0 over Philly. That battle of NL East teams, by the way, the Marlins are 19-23. The Phillies are 22-21. Right now we've got the Pirates, 17-25, not a great team, with the heavily underachieving Braves. But the Braves are up 3-2 in the as that game heads to the bottom of the fifth. And the surprising, and I may have to just stop saying surprising, but the surprising Red Sox are up 5-3 over the Blue Jays. That game is in the bottom of the fifth, with the Red Sox sitting at 26-18 and the Blue Jays at 23-18. Red Sox still holding on to a slim lead over the Yankees in the division. Well, I guess the Red Sox and the Rays both have 26 wins. The Yankees with 25 wins. That AL East, man, that's a beast of a division. You know, that Giants-Reds game, by the way, 19-4. Just want to touch on the fact that that is the most runs scored by any team this year, which gave the Giants a four-game sweep in Cincinnati. Boy, I look at that score, and you know, we were talking about it before the show started. San Francisco, fun thing in the box, is San Francisco went for a run in the first, 9 runs in the third, 4 in the fifth, 4 in the seventh, 1 in the ninth. So they decided to put runs on the board every other inning, bookending it with ones, that 9 in the third. And then the fifth and seventh, they scored 4. So you wonder, like, at what point would you call off the dogs? It's almost like, and here we go, you know I'm going for it. It's almost like asking, do you swing on a 3-0 pitch in a blowout? Nate, let's go right for it. Yes or no question. Should he have swung? Cue us up, by the way, with who we're talking about, too. I didn't do that.
Yeah, we're talking about Yermin Mercedes, who was it Tuesday night, swung up. He was a 3-0 count. The White Sox were absolutely blowing out the Twins because, I mean, that's just what teams do. I'm looking forward to Baltimore playing Minnesota in upcoming this weekend. Maybe we can get some wins back on the board here. But, you know, Tony La Russa decides that he's going to take a shot at his own player for swinging 3-0 and just launching a ball into the stands. Now, should he have swung 3-0? You know, I guess that's a question. Normally you would say the take sign is on, but at the same time, you know, he's a young guy. He's leading Major League Baseball in batting average right now. He opened the year, what was it, 8 straight games where he hit in 8 straight games before being retired or something like that, or was it 8 consecutive at-bats? I forget exactly what the number was, but it was something ridiculous that he just came out of the gates on fire. He is the reason why the White Sox are leading their division right now when you consider that Jose Abreu is hurt, Luis Robert is hurt, Eloy Jimenez is hurt, and yet you have Yermin Mercedes, who is out here just making his case to push Randy Arozarena for AL Rookie of the Year. And for La Russa to decide, well, he should have known better and never swing at a 3-0 pitch when you're blowing the other team out. You know, it's baseball.
Now,
blowouts happen, now, and if somebody's going to get upset about it, whatever.
So a little more, yes, and a couple of other pieces of context I want to bring into this. We both only mentioned that it was a 3-0 pitch, but I should also mention, for those who don't know, Tony La Russa, the manager of the first-place White Sox with one of the best records, if not the best record in baseball right now, it was the game at the time was 15-4. Chicago is in the lead. And it wasn't just the fact that it was a 3-0 pitch. It was an infielder, Williams I'm so bad with names. Estudio. There we go. The pitcher. But he was an infielder again. So it was a guy who's not used to pitching, and he just kind of lobbed a 47-mile-an-hour. It wasn't even an Ephus pitch, honestly. It was just kind of, here, let's hope we get it to the catcher. It was like, you know, you and me playing in the backyard with a little less effort even. So, you know, situationally, You're crushing the other team. You just brought in some random dude to just get the ball from the pitcher to the catcher. And Tony La Russa, the manager of the White Sox, like I said, and he's an old school guy. The guy spent, he's already in the Hall of Fame. He's been a manager for what feels like 100 years. And he told, he had allegedly, I still want to know if this was true or not, but he allegedly gave the take sign to the batter, which means, hey, I'm your manager. I'm telling you, don't swing. And the guy swung and hit a home run and, you know, only increased the lead of a game that was pretty much out of reach already. And a lot of the questions that I've been reading online or listening to and hearing on radio shows is, you know, should he have swung? And I would say overwhelmingly, Nate, and tell me if you think I'm off the mark on this, but it feels like overwhelmingly the baseball world thinks that Tony La Russa was off base on calling out his player. And it wasn't just that he called him out, by the way. Tony La Russa, the manager, got on his own player for they were winning the game, and he padded the lead. But he got upset with the player for hitting the home run for not listening to the take sign, and he called him out publicly. And that's, I think, a big part of it to me, too. Like, if he did it behind the scenes, I don't even know this would be really a story. And I think that might be part of a generational thing, in my opinion, especially because it seems like all the young players have come out and crushed La Russa, and a lot of the talking heads, ourselves, I guess, now are part of that, I suppose. Ugh, that's scary. So just with that backdrop, I can't help but think, you know, there's the two sides. Should he have swung? Should he have been trying to continue to do what he does? Is he worrying about his fantasy stats? Or is his job more to listen to the manager? Or if you're in football, listen to the coach? So do you have a problem with what he did? I mean, just, you know, with respect to how he handled it with the manager, not so much the plate appearance, but his dealings with Tony La Russa.
You know, on the question of whether he should have swung or not, I do agree that the traditional sacred baseball book that is not to be questioned by the old school hardliner says you never swing 3-0, that you're taking there all the way, no matter who you are. And I get that. But, you know, how many times have you watched a sporting event, whether I specifically have the game of basketball in my mind, but I'm watching, you know, my favorite teams. They come down and they fire up a three-point shot, and the instant reaction that I have is, no, bad shot, why would you do that? And then the shot goes in. So you're like begrudgingly saying, like, okay, well, I can't be upset because it worked. You know, that's
go, right? like a kick return in football where he's like, why are you running out there? Oh, yeah, good job.
Exactly. Like, you know, it's only a stupid decision when it doesn't work. So, you know, 3-0 Ephus pitch is coming in 45 miles an hour. Your man Mercedes swings at it, and he taps it back to the pitcher. Now it's one of those, like, what are you doing? Why wouldn't you take that, maybe get a walk? But, you know, it worked. He was looking for the pitch. He got his pitch. He crushed his pitch. That's what you do.
It worked for
who? These guys are up there. It worked for Mercedes. You know, he's up. He's up there. Like, these guys are paid. They're paid to hit the ball. And at the end, when in 6 years, when he's looking for his next
wait. There, you. I question the core of your argument now. Because you said they're paid to hit the ball. Do you true now? You're at a little less of a traditional desk job in some ways, in other ways you're not. But I'll go with me for an example because I know my world. And every job I've worked, I've always had a boss, and that boss has always reported to somebody else. And quite frankly, one of the key things in every job I've had, and I think this would be true for most people, a lot of people at least, is your job is to do what your manager tells you to do or your director tells you to do, or if you're closer to a C level or a V level, what the CEO tells you to do. Your job isn't to just do what you think will help the company, I mean, unless that's specifically what your role is, like a business development or something like that. But Sorry, I couldn't let you continue without saying with letting you say your job is to hit the ball, because I don't know if that's true or not. That might be how we want to interpret it for our argument.
Well, let's tweak what you're saying a little bit. The manager's job is to win baseball games, yes, and to put the team in the best position to win baseball games.
Absolutely.
And the way that you win baseball games is by scoring more runs than the other team.
But if you're if you're managerial,
you can't score runs without hitting the ball.
You know, they had scored enough runs. If this was like, and this is a ridiculous scenario, but if it was a 3-0 game and every one of your pitchers somehow managed to get dead arms because they, you know, got their second shot the day before, so they have to send out an infielder to go pitch, which, reminder, go get your shots if you haven't. But if you're just sending somebody out there, it's a 3-0 game, and, you know, you've got, like, Gleyber Torres throwing a pitch or something, then, of course, you just wallop the ball every time you possibly can. But in this case, it was, like I said, it was 15-4. You know, it was an 11-run cushion, and I understand you want to try to distance yourself from the opponent as much as you can. But your point, again, is, okay, so you listen to the manager, and the manager's job is to win the game. So are you telling me that Tony La Russa, Hall of Fame manager, and look, give me the old argument you want all the time. I kind of do agree with it. I think it's ridiculous in some ways, and I know it's ageist, that both he and Dusty Baker are managers in a league that is so analytical. But they're doing well, so who am I to say? But so you're telling me that he did a bad job, that he didn't do what he thought he needed to win the game? That's your point?
No, that's not my point. And I agree that, you know, putting the take sign on there, that's absolutely right. But I think where he crossed the line and started doing a bad job is when he comes out and publicly rakes his player over the coals. And instead of getting his players back, it, you know, this is a situation where you pull Yermán Mercedes aside in the locker room and be like, hey, we were already up big. I gave you the take sign. Why did you ignore it? You don't go to the press and be like, oh, there's going to be consequences. He deserves whatever's coming at him. Like, no, you don't do that. Shut up, Tony. Go have another beer and sit in the dugout and shut up. Like, I'm so tired.
For those who don't,
yeah.
For anybody who doesn't get that reference, Tony La Russa was dinged for a DUI. Was like a week after he signed the contract, or like the day after, or something.
Yeah, I don't think he's allowed in the state of Missouri right now.
Yeah. Missouri,
yeah.
Maybe, but not Missouri.
yeah.
So I get it. I think you're not wrong with the fact that you can't call a player out right now in 2021. And I actually honestly think that kind of thing is part of what cost Joe Girardi his job as Yankee manager before Boone came in. Boone seems like one of the rips on Joe Girardi was that he was, you know, in town. I don't know if you've heard this one, but we would call him Joey Binders because he would just open up his binder and see what you're supposed to do. Now, he was an analytical guy, especially towards the end, but he also wouldn't be afraid to call out his players and kind of be a little bit more of a hard-nosed manager as opposed to, say, an Aaron Boone, who's more of a player's manager. As a Baltimore Orioles fan, I'm sure you understand that there are certain aspects of a guy like Buck Showalter, who is a very long-time manager for both the, you know, he had a lot of baseball in him, and he's been a manager for Baltimore and a manager for the Yankees, you know, before my time. But, you know, he's definitely more of an old-school kind of tough guy, whereas, I don't know, I just don't know if you can call guys out nowadays like you used to. I mean, one of the things that I think is frustrating maybe as a manager, and this goes for any sport really, football, baseball, even maybe hockey, I don't know, but you know, your star players and even sometimes your above average players will be dramatically out-earning what the coaches are making. And if you're the owner and you've got two people complaining, you know, in the past you would say, no, your job is to listen to the manager. That's why we have him. He's in charge. He's the man. But now you've got the players who are making the money and in a sense have the power. So to me, that's empowered players to voice when they're unhappy and if they feel like they're being attacked. Whereas in the past, you just kind of would tuck your tail between your legs and do what the manager tells you. I mean, I don't know. That's my thought on why he's able to push back on Tony La Russa so much. I mean, what's your main thought of why Tony La Russa took a bad approach? Because that's my thought, is that it's just sort of the modern way of doing things, and it's the money.
I just think that Tony La Russa has made himself the story unnecessarily. Like, this was going to be just another blowout. Nobody is making a big deal out of any in particular moment in that Giants game today, which was a bigger blowout than the White Sox and Twins game was, because the manager didn't come out and call out the player that scored the run in the ninth inning of a 19-4 blowout, because it doesn't matter. I'm seizing on an old Earl Weaver quote from back when the Mets beat the Orioles in the World Series. You know, they asked him, like, "What didn't you think that if you just got this game back to Baltimore, you could have won the series in seven?" And Earl Weaver said, "The beauty of our sport is that we can't just run three plays into the line and punt the ball away. You got to give the other team their crack." You know, baseball, you play until there's 27 outs. If that means that you beat the living crap out of the other team, you beat the living crap out of the team. But it means that they also have the opportunity to come back and score until they get their 27th out. I get it. You don't. It's the old sportsmanship argument of you don't want to, you know, be a bad sport and run up the score. But if the other team is just that
Why
bad,
not?
Sometimes they're just that bad. Why don't you want to rub it in on somebody?
Yeah, who cares? You're being paid. If it's a high school or a college thing, then yeah, you kind of got to look out for the players. And I might already not be happy with my own take here, but you know, you have to look out for the non-professionals' mental health in a sense more than the professional, simply because yes, they're being paid, and part of what you're paying for, tell me if you disagree, but I think part of what you're paying for is a player or an athlete to handle the publicness of being a professional athlete. I mean, you know, there's only, you know, 30, NFL head coaching, or I forget what the total number is. I think it's 128 professional franchises. So there's only, you know, so many head coaching positions, more manager positions. You know, there's only so many roster spots, and you get paid a heck of a lot of money. Even the minimums on all of these sports is much higher than the average household income. That's for darn sure. And I just think inherently by getting and signing that contract, you're also signing up for some sense of public scrutiny. You know, no matter what happens, say you're on the worst team, right? Let's go with let's go with the Reds, right? They just got shellacked. They're an easy target. So if you're a member on the Reds, but somehow they get hot, right, and they make it to one of the wild card games, you know, there's probably the worst player on the team who's a starter. I'm not going to name a name because I don't want to do that to anybody, but their worst outfielder is going to be in position to make a terrible, terrible mistake in the bottom of the ninth of a very critical game, and could very well villainize himself for that city for the rest of his life. And it's a terrible thing, but I mean, Moises Alou and Steve Bartman if it wasn't for a couple of years ago, Moises Alou and Steve Bartman would still be on the hook in some ways. I don't know. I just think that's what you're signing up for, is getting scrutinized like he did by Tony La Russa. That's part of it. Did Tony La Russa maybe cross the line? And I don't agree with the fact or the take that he made the story about him. He did what he thought was right. I mean, you know, he wasn't thinking about the story, because the story didn't become the story until after the game. But in the heat of the moment, you know, I you knew he wasn't happy.
I still don't think that La Russa handled it properly. I think there's way better ways to handle it. Specifically, you know, if you want to pull him aside and you want to give him an earful in the locker room, then by all means. And even if you want to say something to the press because you want to make it known that you're handling it in a certain way, just like, you know, your men and I are, you know, we talked about that in the locker room, or we're going to talk about it in the locker room after the game. And leave it at that. Managers do that all the time where they, you know, they point out like, hey, something happened here. It shouldn't have happened. But they don't tell you everything. They don't go out and then double down and triple down and be like, he broke all the unwritten rules of the game and there's going to be consequences. He basically invited the Twins pitcher the next day to throw at him. And the Twins pitcher did throw at him. And then the Twins pitcher got suspended.
Yeah, no, that's definitely something,
you know,
something outrageous.
That's something that just needs to, in the headhunting in baseball, you know, that's something that needs to go away. But when you got guys like Tony La Russa hanging around here that are apparently advocating for it, that's garbage. Now, I'm all for the game policing itself, but, you know, understand that there's going to be consequences for your actions. And you know what? If Tony La Russa, if this whole thing played out without La Russa making his comments, if it, Yermin Mercedes swings 3-0, launches the infielder's pitch into the night sky, and then they come out the next morning and they decide to throw at him without any comments from the manager saying there's going to be consequences or anything like that, you know, it just the game happens, nobody says anything, and then he gets thrown at. Everybody would know why it happened. It wouldn't be a story. We wouldn't be talking about it, and nobody would care about Tony La Russa. He just gets to continue being the manager of the best team in the American League. But instead, now it looks like retaliation, and there's no defense for it.
So, you know, you've now more than a few times, and I think I have too, brought up the unwritten rules, which the unwritten rules, love them or hate them. One of the main unwritten rules, or one of the ones you hear about a lot, is bunting towards the end of a no-hitter. And I would specifically say, you know, let's call it a 10-0 no-hitter, not a 2-0 no-hitter. So stay in that very specific one. You know what, Nate? Hold on. Let me just check my phone right now. It's 9:27. I'm going to check and see, do I have any alerts about any near no-hitters right now? Because, you know, at any time I look at my phone these days, it could be no-hitter time. As we had our six, one, two, three, four, five, six no-hitters so far this season. We've had two. Yeah, thank you. My kid loves to count. But we had our sixth one yesterday thrown by my guy Corey Kluber, which was just, you know, as a Yankee fan, just let me first say I absolutely love seeing it. I remember as a kid thinking how special no-hitters were. I loved every second of it. Like I said, the tension. I know we've brought this up more than a few times. You know, what would you, you know, if you could be at any event, what would you want to be at? And I stand by my answer being a no-hitter despite the tons of them that have been going on lately.
Yeah.
But are there too many of them? I mean, it's like too much of a good thing. Is that, you know, it's like ice cream, man. If you have too much ice cream, you're going to get brain freeze. Do you think the no-hitter is devalued or any less special now that we've had so many of them?
Ooh, tricky question, because as an Orioles fan who just had our first one, what was that, like 2 or 3 weeks ago, first one since 1991, first solo pitcher since 1969. Hey, if the Orioles broadcasters are allowed to bring it up in every game, I'm allowed to bring it up every time we talk. But is it getting devalued? I think maybe a little bit. And it's a shame because, you know, it used to be so special that you would get that alert in the sixth or seventh inning and you would turn it in to see, oh, is he going to go all the way? And now you get the alert in the sixth or seventh inning, and you're like, eh, if he gets to the ninth, I'll tune it in. And then when he gets to the ninth, you're like, I don't know why I'm watching this. I know what's going to happen. It's Corey Kluber against the bottom of the Indians order. Who cares? We know he's going to get through this. Now, all of that, none of that is actually statistically true. It's still a very rare historic accomplishment when you look in the grand scheme of baseball, but I do think that it is a problem, and I think it goes hand in hand with the increase in strikeout totals. And there have been a couple of really good articles floating out there. I know specifically Tim Kirchen is doing a great series with him over at ESPN and the different outlets that he's working with, that, you know, he's going through this whole analysis of why are strikeouts up so much. And it's kind of twofold. One, the pitchers today have just such ridiculous stuff. The average fastball in baseball today sits at like between 94 and 96, and that's the average. Every team has at least one guy that can go out there and throw 100 miles an hour. Usually, in a lot of these teams, it's a starter. So we're not even talking about the guys like the Aroldis Chapmans that are coming out of the bullpen and just throwing smoke. But the other element from the pitcher end is that guys, even though they have these 100-mile-an-hour fastballs, they're not even relying on that 100-mile-an-hour fastball. They're throwing more than 50% breaking balls and changeups that are so good that they can throw them in any count. So you can't – you basically have to sit fastball, because if you're not sitting on 100, you're never going to catch up to it. And then you're getting nothing but breaking balls that you just can't hit unless you're looking for it. And then from the hitter's perspective, it doesn't matter. Like, all these hitters, they don't care if they strike out. It doesn't matter if you strike out, as long as when you're making contact, you're hitting the ball 390, 400 feet, which is what a lot of these guys are doing. They have one swing, the bat goes through one swing path, and as long as the pitchers know to avoid that swing path, well, then they're gonna get their strikeouts. And as you see the strikeouts go up, your hits are going to come down. And so you're seeing a rash of no-hitters increasing.
Now, Nate, you and I are both in our 30s now. So our baseball history knowledge is, I think you're in your 30s, is somewhat limited. But, you know, I've heard the stat many times that the record for no hitters in a season since 1900 is 7, which has happened in 1990 as well as 91, and then 2012 and 2015. Now there's no chance we miss it. And for the record, I do want to say I feel like it should be we've had 6.5 no hitters. Like, I get that the no hitter is significantly devalued, but you know, Madison Bumgarner did what he did. Now, just want to take a quick trip through the season. The Padres, Joe Musgrove, threw the first one on April 9th against the Rangers. Remember that. The White Sox, Carlos Rodon, threw a no-hitter against Cleveland on April 14th. So Rangers and Cleveland. And then John Means, you remember that one, no-hit the Mariners on May 5th. So the Rangers, 20, Cleveland, and then the
up,
Mariners.
27 down.
Oh, it was beautiful. Now, Wade Miley of the Reds, who, by the way, just got shellacked. Clearly, Wade Miley, not at his best last, you know, they didn't have anybody as good as that, but he was able to no-hit Cleveland, who, again, got no-hit on April 14th. So Cleveland got their second no-hit performance of no-hits on May 7th, and then May 18th, 11 days later, Spencer Turnbull no-hit Seattle again. And then Corey Kluber yesterday no-hit Texas. So Texas, Cleveland, and Seattle have all been no-hit twice. And I didn't quite realize this, but Seattle has no-hit twice in, what is it, 2 weeks, on May 5th and May 18th? It's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. I mean, It's embarrassing. I mean, by the way, Kluber was a walk away from it being a perfect game. John Means, also very close to a perfect game. I'm almost at this point wondering, you know, are we going to see a perfect game this year? The inevitability of it just seems to grow with every single one of these. And, you know, I'm a data analyst, Nate, and I'm looking at this of like some frequency chart, and it feels like it's only going to get more frequent as we get closer into this, as we dive into the warmer months. And when my logic is that's when you really start to see the home run balls fly, right? So mm-hmm. you're going to start to see players really try to hit that launch angle and drive it out of the park. But if the pitcher's on that day, then everything's either going to be, you know, a fly out or a strikeout. And I don't know, maybe you will see that perfect game.
You know, I think there's still something magical about the perfect game, and that's what's going to separate
totally.
Us from the no-hitters. Because, as you point out, you know, Kluber was one walk away. I think Joe Musgrove was one walk away, maybe two walks away when he threw his. John Means, the only thing between him and the perfect game is Pedro Severino behind
pitch.
The plate. Although, yeah, I guess it was. It was officially ruled a wild pitch. I still have no love for Pedro Severino, so I'm going to stay on him as long as I can, because it's truly not officially an Orioles game until Pedro Severino has a ball go through his legs or just drops a pitch for no reason whatsoever. But, you know, that's the only thing separating John Means from his perfect game, and he's actually still faced the minimum number of batters. But, you know, with that definition of 27 up, 27 down, nobody reaching base. That in and of itself is just so special that I don't know that we will see one, because there's always the element of the umpire getting involved.
Damn it, Nate. So, you know, it's frustrating to me that, well, you know what? I can't say that Gary Sanchez is the greatest catcher in the world, but I do remember some nights where it was like, oh my gosh, what are you doing, buddy? But you know, it is frustrating that Corey Kluber threw the first no-hitter for the Yankees since 99, which was David Cone's perfect game. I remember it well, and it was fantastic, because the year before, David Wells had thrown the perfect game. And it's funny, a lot of Yankee fans, rightfully so, get mocked for thinking, oh my gosh, we haven't won a title this year. What a travesty. I heard in the last week that a stat that I believe it was 21, you know, different teams have won World Series. Have not won World Series since the Yankees won their latest one in 2009. So I don't know. I think Yankee fans need to chill on that. But it's funny, you know, like, my point was that Yankee fans are so used to winning World Series. In a way, I felt like I was like, was spoiled by getting the two perfect games from Wells and Coney back to back. But just one thing I wanted to ask you as a sports fan, right? So, okay, no hitter let's just say baseline no hitter is devalued, because I, like I said at the top of the show, I wanted to make the joke like, oh, did anybody get a no hitter yet? Okay, maybe a little bit, maybe for the second slate of games, you know. But the perfect game does have that separation. Now, like I said, I know you're a sports fan. I was trying to think of like a comparable in, you know, football or basketball, which would be, okay, this is cool, but it's a little bit devalued unless you take it a step further. And one of the things that I heard was the 4,000-yard passing season in football used to be holy bananas. What an accomplishment. Now it feels like half the league can do it. I mean, you know, at this point, if, you know, Sam Darnold and Robbie Anderson really get along in Carolina, heck, they might do it, or he and, you know, Christian McCaffrey or something. It just seems like any, you know, passer out there can do it. But there's still the 5,000-yard mark, and there's that separation. There's that just taking it to the next level, or, you know, like a rushing for 1,000 yards. Who cares? Give me 1,000 yards, you know, rushing and 1,000 yards receiving. You know, something like that. I mean, you know, I'm curious, do you look at any of the other sports like basketball or hockey and anything else jump out at you like that, that's just changed as the sport has changed over the last number of years?
I actually, now that you say that, I'm literally watching the Penguins and Islanders playoff game as we're on air, and the goal just went in to tie the game up there. So I guess you could say the 40-goal season in hockey, or, you know, a 30-40.
That's a good one.
30, I'd have to look at soccer again and look at it closely. Like maybe 30 goals. Yeah, like I think 30 goals in soccer would be insanely high, but you know, every year they seem to be getting closer and closer to that number. 2,000 yards rushing for football. I remember it was a big deal when Larry Johnson ran for 2,000 yards for Penn State, and now you're just kind of like, okay, is 2,000 still a big deal?
In college,
and it definitely is, but yeah. Oh, in college, definitely. But like in the NFL, you're like 2,000 yards? Yeah, all right.
Well, I mean, 2,000 yards in the NFL still doesn't happen too much.
Yeah. But, you know. It happens.
In college, I do think you've seen it a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. But, you know, it's still a Masani shoot for. And even sticking in baseball, you know, it used to be that 30, 40 home runs was a big plateau. But now it's like, okay, talk to me when
you
hit 50, 60.
Yeah, wow. I wonder if baseball won't acknowledge it, but last couple of years there's been so much talk of has the ball been juiced, or you know how tightly wound the core of the ball was, and you know has it been jumping off the bats too much, trying to almost manufacture or remanufacture the home run chases from back in the day. And it kind of goes in line with different things that I think baseball has been trying to do or wanting to try to do to change the sport. I just want to really, really, really call you out on this one. There have only been 8 2,000-yard rushing seasons. Derrick Henry had one last year, and then the previous one was Adrian Peterson in 2012. It just felt like there was the Jamal Lewis, Chris Johnson, Adrian Peterson, and Derrick Henry, but those have been a couple of years spread out. I still think that 2,000-yard season is pretty special. I got to defend the running back. I still don't think the running back is completely dead yet. Anyway, I digress. So in baseball, right, I think there are ways to solve this. And I've been trying to think, just like you have, just like everybody has. If you're listening to this, you care about the sport of baseball, right? I don't think you're listening to this unless you clicked on it accidentally, or you're my wife who is so wonderful and listens to this every week. I honestly think of my wife as the most definition of a casual baseball fan, where she going back to the 90s Yankees, she, you know, it was fortunate she had that and her dad would watch with her. And I think of this across all different franchises, you know, how would a Pirates fan feel about this? How would an Orioles fan feel about these kinds of things that would energize and reinvigorate the game and make it more exciting to watch? And I think, what is exciting? You know, I just wrote an article on the blog about a way to increase the pace of the game. That was something I really focused on in that article, was the pace of the game. And I talked a lot about the pitch clock and how I could think that would help somebody not, like, you know, look, if you watch any sporting event, people are sitting there on their phones. I'm sitting there on my phone if I'm at a Yankee game, right? Because there's so much time to look at the phone. It's like, oh, my God, throw the pitch. We all know there's some pitchers out there. It's like, geez, I could go get a sandwich and come back, and they still wouldn't throw the pitch, especially if I did mobile order. I'll just walk up there, pick it up, and shoot, I didn't miss anything. Now I think they need to fill that space. They either need to cut down on that time, or they need to fill the space with something that makes you riveted. It doesn't even have to be, Nate, I don't even think it has to be, like, action. And I don't even necessarily mean it has to be, you know, the sausage race or watching the presidents run around, you know, RFK, which I love it, by the way. I love those stupid little things. I think they are hilarious. There are probably plenty of people who think they're the most annoying thing in the world. I can't get enough. Give me the campiness. It's supposed to be fun. Supposed to be fun, but it's not. It's supposed to be fun. But, you know, I was thinking about, like, you know, banning the shift is something that we've talked about. I think it was one of the first things we really talked about. But the more I think about it, I really think banning the shift would go a couple of different ways. One, you would force teams to hit for average. And inherently by doing that, you'd take some guys off of your roster who are home run hitters, and bam, you're going to get more base runners. You're going to get more guys who are – ready to run on first base. And then what that means is with every pitch, any type of crack of the bat means something's going to happen on the field. And once you have the ball being thrown around from the outfield to the infield, you're more likely to have an errant throw. And it's, look, defense isn't at its all-time high right now. So you're more likely to just watch one sail one over third base and actually get exciting plays like, say, an inside-the-park home run, which we had this week. The Padres' Cronenworth hit an inside-the-park home run. That is excitement. Excitement is, unfortunately, what they've manufactured in extra innings. Excitement is a guy at the plate with a runner on second, and you don't look for the home run. You say, oh, my gosh, can he hit it between the left fielder and the center fielder, or the center fielder and the right fielder, or can he ground it, you know, just squeak it through the hole? And if you're hitting, you know, a ground ball to third base, that's exciting because that means he has to field it and throw it rather than, okay, did he hit it? And, okay, it's a flyout. Did he hit it? And it's a strikeout, you know.
Yeah, I think you're onto something that I do agree that the way that they can make baseball more exciting is to increase action. And this is one of the things that Theo Epstein, you know, he steps down from GM of the Cubs, and now he's a special advisor to Major League Baseball. And they're, you know, some of these proposals that they're putting in down in the low, unaffiliated minor leagues with, you know, the moving the mound back 1 foot and the double hook rule that I know we talked about on a prior episode, where you start with a DH, but when you pull your starter, you also lose the DH. And, you know, the idea behind a lot of these, I remember listening to an interview with Theo Epstein, and the idea is to basically force teams to put the ball in play. You want guys on the base paths because when the guys are on the base paths and when the ball's in play, like you're saying, more stuff happens. There's more action. There's more stuff to watch instead of just, okay, did the pitcher strike the batter out? Yeah, he did. Oh, the batter made contact. Did it go over the fence? Yeah, it did. Okay, whoop-de-doo. Next guy up, okay, and here we are 3.5 hours later. It's now a 5-4 game, and nobody's really missed anything except for, like, five swings of the bat that really mattered. So I think there is something to that. The idea of around with the
– Oh, let me just be clear. I hate the idea of moving a pitching mound. Finish your thought, but I want to rip into moving the pitching mound.
Okay. Well, so my problem is that I don't like the idea of toying with the rules of baseball and changing, like, the inherent game to force these things, like moving the mound or banning the shift. I'd rather see them do it from the contractual side. So instead of incentivizing and giving out, instead of paying these guys big bucks, like the Chris Davis contract, which thank God that only has 1 year left on it. And he, you know, it was announced, I think yesterday, that he is having labrum surgery. So he is officially done for the season. He will not be appearing in an Orioles uniform this year. So there's only 1 year left on that deal. But, you know, instead of having teams that are actually paying guys like Chris Davis, incentivize the guys to get paid like the Fernando Tatis Juniors, the Randy Arozarenas, these guys that are – or, you know what, as much as I hate to say it, DJ LeMahieu, Brett Gardner – Kevin Kiermaier, these guys that are out there that are just pests.
Who's doing that, though? I mean, it's the GM's call, right? So no GM, if everybody's as smart as they think they are and everybody's absolutely shifting towards this home run model, it's not going the other way. The more GMs get analytical, the more they go for this boom or bust style. And I think that's why we're seeing this, you know, extreme explosion of no-hitters. It's because it's not just one or two teams doing it. They're all doing it. So I get it. I like your point. I love your point, actually. I wish it was to me, now, I'm not trying to be mean, but it sounds great, but it seems a little idealistic. I would say, you know, without changing the, you know, I get it. You're trying to take something that's on the, not change anything that's on the field and make it economical because you can force change through the economics. You're right. The problem is the people who make those decisions aren't changing it. What I was thinking is, yes, I think you're going to have to do something on the field. And you know, okay, so let's just take the shift thing out of it. I do think the shift thing is the easiest move, and I would be curious to know who would be against it other than some base than a baseball purist, which I respect exists. I just don't know who would push back on it, honestly. Another thing, you know, I hate this. I hate the suggestion I'm about to make. I hate it. But what if every stadium had some type of standard measurement? I hate it. I think it's one of the things that makes baseball exciting and amazing and a unique and great and wonderful sport. But just humor the idea. If just try to push out of your brain that it completely kills some of the beautifulness of baseball, some of the things that make us love it as the core sport we do. But imagine if, just pretend we aliens landed on the planet and invented baseball, and they decided to make the dimensions the same for every stadium. Wouldn't you think that would mean that players can't try to go get home run hitters that are built specifically for their stadiums and then go get no hit on the road? And don't, you know, I do think it would even things out a little bit. It would change some of the strategies. You couldn't try. Yeah, I just think that a lot of these teams now are also trying to get players that, you know, the Yankees are very clearly trying to get guys who can hit the ball out of that short right field. The Red Sox are clearly going for guys who can either hit it over, and it would be a killer strategy to just get everybody who can pepper the ball against the monster. You know, you can just turnstile every single at bat. Wear out pitchers that way. Yeah, wow, maybe I should be GM. But I hate the suggestion, but humor me. Pushing aside that it's so impure, what would you think about something like that? Would it be fair?
You know, maybe. And the reason why, in a way, it could work, but then you look, it's weird when you look at it, because you got teams like, right now the Orioles are awful at home, which makes no sense. They cannot win a home game. They're the antithesis of Colorado, who is actually, for as bad as the Rockies are, decent at home, and I think they have like three wins on the road this year. And so to your point, if you just standardize everything, are you not taking away some of that home field advantage that teams love and crave so much? And
so
I guess it would kind
of
standardize the game, but how does that – I guess I'm blanking on how that would translate into
– makes more action. Because I think the construction of teams would be a lot less. Let's get guys who can jack the ball out at our home field. If you're playing 81 at home, you're going to get somebody who can hit a bit. Another thing, slightly different take on it, is just simply move the walls back a little bit. Just a universal deal that you just move everything, some percentage back, like every wall gets moved back 5%, or, increase the height of it so that the launch angle would be, you got to find some baseline statistic, be it, height or distance or some combination of both, and basically try to make it harder for the pure home run hitters to actually hit the pure home run.
So basically make every part the Polo Grounds?
I was going to go with school Petco, but fair enough.
Yeah, let's just make every part 600 feet to dead center. 600 feet to dead center, but 200 feet down the line.
I love it.
I actually, since we're throwing out ideas that we absolutely hate, but they might not be the worst thing, since I'm the one that threw out, hey, maybe instead of changing something about the metrics of the game, instead do it economically. I hate this idea, but I'm going to say it. Salary cap, salary floor.
I'm down.
Because because I hate the idea. I love it because I think you have it. I love baseball the way it is because you don't need the salary cap to create competitive balance as much as some of these smaller market teams like to think that they do need it to get competitive balance. But then you have the Rays out here that are beating everybody. But if you put the balance, the salary cap in, and also increase the floor, so you know you can't have the Pirates out here spending nothing. You can't have the Orioles out here spending nothing.
Joke.
Everybody's got to up their. You got to pay somebody. You kind of, you know, everybody's now forced to play the game on the same financial standard. So it takes away the opportunity for the Yankees to pay a Giancarlo Stanton and an Aaron Judge, and definitely takes away the Orioles' ability to pay somebody like a Chris Davis, and instead you have to find guys that actually fill out a roster to win games. But I don't know. I don't know the answer to what the answer truly is to create more action on the base pad. That's why Theo Epstein's getting paid the big bucks.
Yeah, I mean, I think, simply put, my only thing I can think of is find some way to hurt the average, hurt the home run guys, help the average guys, and that would be take away the vaunted launch angle. I mean, you can't do anything about exit velo, but I think, got to hurt that launch angle. Dave, I understood you had a trivia question. Do you want to go there, or do you have anything else you wanted to go over as we get close to the close here?
So you're right. I did have two things in my pocket. One was an actual trivia question, but I think I might forego the trivia this time because instead I really want to give a shout out to the guy that is the offensive face of my favorite team, Trey Mancini. A year ago, he's 14 months removed from his colon cancer diagnosis, surgery, and recovery. Not only is it absolutely wonderful and a small miracle that this guy is back and playing baseball again. It's one, you got to love everything he went through to get back on the field. But as of today, he has 10 home runs, is either leading or tied for the American League lead in RBIs with 39, and that's through 43 games. Through 42 games, he had a .840 on base plus slugging. He is back, and he is absolutely tearing the cover off the ball. In addition to, everything that John Means has been to the Orioles franchise this year, the Trey Mancini story is one all across baseball that is absolutely fantastic to see. And I just, anytime that I can work in a Trey Mancini tribute, I want to do it. So in lieu of trivia, that's where we're going tonight.
Oh, nobody deserves a shout-out more than that. I mean, we think of sometimes the things that these guys have to face, like, dealing with a loudmouth manager or having to face things like pitchers who are throwing, 100 miles an hour, and, that's all trivial. You know, real quick, just I don't know if you've seen Kevin Pillar's face recently. That's
yes.
Another thing. That's baseball is a tough sport. It's a marathon. It is not a sprint. It's a marathon to a sprint, I would say. But it was great. It was a great show with you, Nate. Give us a shout out on www.sportcitychefs.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Sport City Chefs. Nate, I'm going to let you close tonight, but let me drop my line here. I have said enough for a lifetime, and for the last time, I wish you all a very pleasant good afternoon. Nate, take us home.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Always great to talk baseball with you. As always, stay hungry. Check out the website. We got more great stuff coming every week. Have a good night, everybody.
Have a good night. Have a good night, guys.
Sports City Chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, bloom like a flower in June. Superman versus MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Sports City Chef. Yeah. Cabbie. Taj. Woo!
that's a kid.